When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 54 of the Footmarks podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango on Twitter. And with me this week is not Jared, but we have with us the queen of somewhere near Colombo, Estelle Vasudevan. She's subbing in for him. And the topic for this particular episode is Pakistan's T20 World Cup history. And Estelle will basically be taking over the hosting duties. So take it away, Estelle.
Yeah, I'll be asking the questions today instead of Behram, so get ready. Just to start things off, we're going to look at all the tournaments that have taken place so far, right? And Pakistan has been actually such a tournament team. Every time they come in, they may not have had, you know, the form leading up or, you know, the big names in the game at that moment. But it seems like right from the first one in 2007 to the most recent one in 2022, they have had some pretty great runs in T20 World Cups. What do you think of their performances overall, Behram?
Well, I mean, we've had 8 editions of the T20 World Cup thus far. Only 2 of them have been called the T20 World Cup. It was the World T20 prior, right? And Pakistan have won the competition in 2009. They've played the final thrice, so they actually lost the final twice. And they've actually gotten knocked out in the semifinals on 3 occasions as well. So only 2 times have they actually failed to make it, you know, to the semifinals and have been knocked out in a stage prior to that. So it's actually quite a far more storied T20 World Cup history than what many might imagine it to be. And I mean, if you think about it, Estelle, no other team has the same semifinal qualification success rate as Pakistan in the T20 World Cup. No one is even close, in fact. I mean, the next best is 4 times out of 8. Pakistan is 6 out of 8. No one is there at 5. There's a logjam at 4. You've got Australia, India, England, the West Indies, New Zealand, and Sri Lanka, all of whom have qualified for the semifinals 4 times. Whereas you look at Pakistan, they might have won it only once, but they've qualified 6 times out of 8. And isn't that kind of crazy?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we were talking about in this week's Uncovered podcast as well, right? About them being such an unpredictable team. They may not have things figured out. But come the big tournament, they really put on their best cricket, right? On that note, let's go into the tournaments. I'm going to go in reverse chronological order. So we're going to go with the most recent tournament first, because we all know the big ones were the early ones for Pakistan. So let's start with 2022. 2 games that I want to talk about. The first one was against India. Yes, disappointing to come out as the losing side in that game. But that was one of the great T20 games of the competition as a whole, wasn't it?
I think it was one of the great T20 games of all time. Forget the competition. And it was such a funny campaign for Pakistan. It might just be their funniest campaign to date, right? Because, well, you spoke about the India game. Of course, that was one that spectators will remember forever. Virat Kohli snatched victory from the jaws of defeat, and Pakistan could not defend 46 runs in the last 3 overs. Then you had Mohammad Nawaz bowling medium pace in the final over of that game. There was that no ball call, if you remember, and then the ball hitting the stumps on the free hit and India running 3. So there was lots and lots of drama. And I mean, you've got to give credit to Virat Kohli at the end of the day. I think that was a spectacular knock. So, I mean, props to him. But even after that, Estelle, Pakistan lost the Park Bean Derby to Zimbabwe out of nowhere, right? And that was such a funny story because for those of you who don't know, there is this Mr. Bean doppelganger who is Pakistani. And this Zimbabwean Twitter account basically went on a rant of how the fake Bean toured Zimbabwe and everyone thought it was the real Mr. Bean and everyone was taking pictures only to find out later that it wasn't the real Mr. Bean. So the stakes were automatically high and then Pakistan lost a thriller to Zimbabwe in Perth. And at that point, honestly, Estelle, I thought it was over, right? I think I've told this story before. I watched that game outside the Jameson factory. And I'm glad that I was going to the Jameson factory after, because I needed it. But they seemed down and out. Yet somehow, you know, the stars aligned, as they say in Pakistan, Kudrat ka Nizam, which is a term that Saqlain Mushtaq made popular. Somehow they managed to make it to the semifinals. And it was just one of those weird, written in the stars sort of tournament arc for them.
Yeah, I mean, my next question was going to be about this Pak Bean rivalry, because it came out of nowhere and it kind of took over the narrative of the World Cup for a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you talk about entertainment in that first game against India, and it was an incredible game, seesawing between, you know, who's dominant at that moment. And then you have Pakistan come back and lose a game to Zimbabwe, which they had no right to lose, right? They restricted them to what was it, 130?
Something like that.
Just couldn't chase it down. So just an incredible arc in that game itself, because was anybody talking about a Pakistani Mr. Bean ever before? It was just this random thing, then suddenly took over social media. Anyway, like you said, they somehow managed to find their way into the semifinals, where they came up against New Zealand. New Zealand, you know, every tournament they come in, they're consistently good, and they kind of put up those big performances against big teams. But this time, it wasn't the case, right? Put on 152 for four. Pakistan comfortably chase it down. Another brilliant performance by Shaheen Shah Afridi and Mohammad Rizwan. I want to talk about Afridi. He had a superb tournament, didn't he?
I mean, he was just almost at his best, right? Because we knew he wasn't fully fit. They did kind of expedite his return to the team after injury, which in a way probably wasn't beneficial for Pakistan in the long run, because then he went on to miss the test matches versus England. But I feel like even a half-fit Shaheen, the way he was bowling, he's one of the reasons, or was one of the reasons, why Pakistan made it to the final. I mean, if you go back to the group stage, right? They defeated the Netherlands. That was fairly straightforward. And you're right to say that they should have chased down that 130-odd versus Zimbabwe. But this was a tournament in which Babar Azam wasn't firing, right? Remember? Like, it was low score after low score after low score. And both of Babar and Rizwan actually got out early in that game versus South Africa. That was very crucial. And then in came Mohammad Haris, playing his first T20 international in a World Cup, and gives Pakistan all the impetus that they required early on. And then Shadab Khan and Iftikhar Ahmed literally pummeled South Africa, right? Every single bowler. I remember what Shadab did to Nokia that day in Sydney. That is where Pakistan probably to themselves felt like they had dropped the ball and they were actually a good team. And now, because of that loss to Zimbabwe, they won't be able to make it to the semi-finals, because there was rain in that game as well, and South Africa ultimately lost via DLS. But Pakistan did almost play a perfect game of T20 cricket against a side which was very, very formidable. And then you have the Dutch, who defeat South Africa in the most dramatic moment that one can imagine, right? Especially in that World Cup. I feel like it kind of eclipsed the Zimbabwe win versus Pakistan in a way. And then I remember that the Dutch literally defeated South Africa, and then Pakistan's team was walking out. They were walking off. And Babar and their captain kind of shared a moment as well, in which they said, like, we've done our job, now you do yours. Because it was imperative for the Netherlands as well, for Pakistan to win that game, because that would ensure them direct qualification for the next event, right?
Yeah.
So, like, they were also rooting for Pakistan, and Pakistan were rooting for them. And then they, like, Pakistan just had to defeat Bangladesh, which they did quite comfortably. You speak of the New Zealand game, and that is that game where Babar Azam actually came into form. Now, 150-odd, that sort of chase is right up Babar and Rizwan's alley. That's what they're really, really good at, right? And they chased it down fairly comfortably, but then ran into white-hot England in the final, which you could say arguably is the best limited overs team in international cricket since, I don't know, 2015 onwards, right? After that group stage exit in the ODI World Cup in 2015. And I mean, sure, Pakistan could only like manage 137 in the first innings. The game seemed like it was pretty much done. But then they came back. And credit to Pakistan's bowlers. I remember that Naseem Shah spell of how he could not manage to get Ben Stokes outside edge. And Haris Rauf got Butler early on. Rauf actually ended up with 2 for 23 in his four overs in that game. And Shaheen looked really, really good as well. even defending 137, Pakistan, who I think at that point in the world did have the best bowling attack, you know, across the globe. And a lot of like the pundits and the commentators were echoing the same sentiment. They look like they might just sneak away with a world title over here, second one at that. And that's where Shaheen took that catch to dismiss Glenn Phillips, I think it was. Oh, no, sorry, not Glenn Phillips. Glenn Phillips was playing for New Zealand. I can't remember who it was for England. But yeah, he injured his knee and he tried to bowl another over. But after a single delivery, he also knew he was toast. And that kind of changed everything. I'm not saying that had Shaheen not gotten injured, England wouldn't have chased it because England are England. But him going out injured pretty much ensured that England would go on to lift the title that evening. And I mean, Ben Stokes was there on the crease and we all know how clutch he is. It's not the first time he's led England to one of these victories, right? You think of the ODI World Cup final. You think of that Headingley Test match. This was just another chapter of that book of clutchness in Ben Stokes' life, which literally started after he conceded four sixes versus Carlos Brathwaite, right? It was all uphill from there for Ben Stokes. But I mean, it was a bit of a dampener that, you know, Shaheen got injured. Yeah. And I'm sure that even the neutral fans were probably quite let down that, oh, this shouldn't have happened. We wanted to see a tight game right till the end because if the Khar bowled Shaheen's over and he got whacked, I think Moeen Ali was the one who kind of took him apart. But, you know, it was still, you know, a campaign in which I felt Pakistan actually overachieved given the way the tournament had gone for them. And they needed that favor from the Netherlands, right? But do not forget the performance of Shadab Khan in this tournament. He was definitely Pakistan's MVP. And if you actually look at his figures, which Varun, our colleague, was so kind to share with me, he has a solid case of being the MVP of that tournament. I know Sam Curran was also brilliant, but Shadab took 11 wickets at a true economy of 0.94 and his true wickets number stood at 0.69. And he also scored 98 runs at a true average of 8.38. But here's the catch. His true strike rate was 50.38. So he was smashing it. And that South Africa game in Sydney really comes to mind. So I feel like it was Shaheen and Shadab who really got Pakistan that far because they were playing the triple anchor. If you remember, after Rizwan and Babar, Shan Masood came at four. Yep. Remember? So I do think that Pakistan weren't a good enough team to lift this particular title and they overachieved. But then again, they played a final and history does remember that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Shadab is one guy who I wanted to talk about because he's lost his way since that tournament, hasn't he? He's not the bowler he was then. You know, you think about Pakistan and why they were able to do so well in that tournament. It is because they had a guy who's getting wickets, not giving away a lot of runs. Mm. And also at the same time, someone who could bash the bowlers in that middle order, which they sorely needed, as you mentioned, with the kind of top order that they possessed. So his form was super critical there. And I think, I mean, we'll talk about the World Cup to come as well later on in the pod. It's going to be critical again, I feel, because they aren't carrying too many spin options in that 15 for this time's World Cup. Going back to Shaheen Afridi, I remember when he got injured, I was covering that test match, right? And it was the most innocuous thing. I mean, test match diving at the boundary, it didn't even, I don't think people even noticed that something had happened. He just kind of hobbled off. I think the medical
panel, the PCB's medical panel didn't notice either. They didn't diagnose it soon enough.
Yeah. I mean, it was such an innocuous thing, like just a general dive. He didn't feel comfortable. He went off the field. And then that turned into such a disruptive injury, right? He started playing, then he had to miss a couple of games, a lot of issues. But for him to come up and put up that kind of performance, I thought really showed his character. And like you said, despite scoring 130 odd in that final, Pakistan was still in that game. I was covering the game at the MCG and it felt like it's going to be a walk in the park for England, right?
Yeah.
But then come those last few overs, Pakistan just managed to stay in striking distance of that English team, which, like you mentioned, right? One of the great limited overs teams we've seen, just absolute domination in T20 and ODI cricket during that period. So all in all, I completely agree with you. It was not their best campaign, but I think they definitely punched above their weight in that one.
Do you remember how they started playing the 92 narrative around this tournament of how it was also in Australia? Pakistan looked also like they also looked down and out in 92. It was the same case this time around. And they were playing England in the final at the MCG. All of the omens pointed towards a Pakistan victory. But then in the end, England changed the narrative. So it would have been fun had they been able to pull that off, right? Because then that would have been a very storied arc that these guys repeated, accolades or whatever of the 92 team, but it wasn't meant to be, and ultimately the best team won because England were by and large the best team competing in that tournament.
This is brought to you by Cricket 8. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. We have a partnership with them where we host live watch-alongs, do podcasts and write articles. If you want to know what is really happening with our game, visit cricket8.com.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if they did win, it would have been such a Pakistan win, right? And yeah, I think we have more to talk about when we come to the 2009 tournament as well. Yeah. Let's move now to 2021 and another game against India, but completely different result.
Yeah.
And the first time they'd beaten them in T20 World Cups. And just to add context to it, in every tournament they've faced India, right? This was the first time that they were able to get over the line against them. And it came like absolute dominant performance, right? Win by 10 wickets. Like nobody saw that coming.
It was incredible. I was in this basement somewhere in Toronto watching this game with a bunch of Pakistan fans, and no one really has any expectations. But Estelle, it's important to mention the context around this tournament and how it began. New Zealand and England had cancelled their tours to Pakistan. And the feeling and sentiment within Pakistan was that of, being dealt with unjustly. That, you know, they'd done so much hard work to get international cricket back in Pakistan. And then based on some bogus threat, New Zealand pulled out. And England didn't have any excuse, right? They just pulled out for no reason at all, probably because they wanted to manage their workloads or whatever. So Pakistan actually was slated in to play lots of top quality cricket prior to this World Cup. And they ended up playing their domestic T20 competition, which I believe was preponed just so that they could get some practice in. So there was that narrative kind of hanging over this game like a cloud. And every Pakistani really wanted this team to show the world that, hey, we're here. We're here to compete. We are good. And if I am being honest, that India win, not for me, but for a lot of Pakistanis, might even rank ahead of the 2009 win because they had never defeated India. And India, I don't know, 13, 14, 15 times they've played Pakistan in World Cups across formats, they've always won. That game was a blowout. Shaheen's new ball spell, the way he got Rohit Sharma and then KL Rahul, that was an absolute jaffer, right? No one was playing that ball. Nasir Hussain, he said those words, they cannot play him. That is also, you know, etched into Pakistan cricket folklore. And then once they had restricted India to 150 odd, the way Babar and Rizwan just came out, nullified India's bowlers and chased it down with 10 wickets in hand. You cannot ask for a more dominant performance. And it was the stuff of dreams. I was with my friend and we couldn't really believe it. We couldn't process the feelings. And what we just did was we had a flag. My friend's car had a sunroof. We went out on the streets in Mississauga, Toronto, and out the sunroof, blasting Pakistan cricket songs and just having fun. And obviously, there's a big diaspora community of both Indians and Pakistanis in Canada. So every now and then, we'd bump into an Indian who'd just look at us and nod and smile because they knew what this meant to Pakistan fans, right? It was incredible. And if I'm being honest, Estelle, that's the World Cup that kind of got away.
Yeah, absolutely. Because from that point, Pakistan were absolutely dominant, right? Group stage, they had 5 wins out of 5.
Yeah.
Just, I don't think any of those games were close, right? They managed to overcome each of those teams they came up against quite comfortably. If I just look back at that tournament, I think the toss played a massive part in it.
Yeah.
And Pakistan were really like benefited by that. They chased against 3 of those teams in the group stage. Batted first against 2, and the 2 games that they batted first were against much lower ranked teams. I think it was Scotland and Namibia who they had to bat first against. So things really seem like, if you, I mean, we spoke about fate and how people were talking about the 92 World Cup in 2022, but 2021, it seemed like things were falling into place for them.
Yeah.
But once again, heartbreak at the hands of Australia in a semi-final.
Yeah.
And this time it was from a guy who no one was rating in that World Cup, right? Matthew Wade. No one, everyone was criticizing Australia for picking him in that middle order. Hmm. And then he destroys Pakistan in that semi.
Yeah. I mean, Pakistan gained so much confidence and momentum after beating India that that kind of set the tone for the rest of the group stages. The New Zealand game was an easy win. The Afghanistan game actually got a wee bit tight, but then Asif Ali hit those four sixes. And then, of course, you expect Pakistan to defeat Scotland and Namibia. But you're right to say that with the dew around in the UAE at that time of the year in the second innings, the toss was important throughout that entire World Cup. And Pakistan at the start did benefit from it. Not to take any credit away from them, they did beat top quality sides in India and New Zealand, right? But it did seem like everything was aligning and it was written in the stars and all of that stuff. And Pakistan going unbeaten in a group stage of a World Cup never happens. Pakistan losing to Australia in a knockout game in a World Cup always happens. So there was a bit of that PTSD even leading into that game, right? And if you remember, Mohammad Rizwan was in the ICU after the group stage.
Yep.
That man literally walked out of the ICU into a World Cup semi-final and got 60-odd. So, I mean, I remember feeling extremely proud of that team even after defeat. I was like, look, every card that you were dealt with prior to this tournament and the way you performed here, like, they deserved all the praise, particularly Rizwan, who is a warrior of a wicketkeeper. At the same time, you did feel like this was a World Cup, like this was the one that got away because, you know, objectively, if you looked at all the teams in the final four, Pakistan were the best team. Yeah. UAE had been their adopted home in that period where Pakistan lost international cricket and could not host any international teams. So all of those things suggested that Pakistan should be favorites now to lift the title. And everyone was expecting a Pakistan versus England final. I think Ben Stokes even tweeted that, right? Let's just skip to the Pakistan versus England final already. But then again, they ran into Australia and it was quite a good game. Pakistan, I think, were probably 10, 15 runs short at the end. 176 wasn't quite enough. And if you look at that entire innings, it was Fakhar Zaman towards the end who really got them going, right? He demolished Mitchell Stark. And that was kind of what gave Pakistan that belief. And then when you come into the bowling, Shaheen struck up front, right? Finch was gone. Mitch Marsh barely survived. And then Shadab Khan got four wickets. So Australia were, what, five down for 90-odd. And that's where Wade and Stoinis come in. Eventually, Hasan Ali also drops that catch, which to his great misfortune, he's always reminded of on social media, which I don't really like these things happen. And you never know, even if he had caught it, Australia might still have chased that target down. But the way Wade and Stoinis took that game away from Pakistan was kind of reminiscent of what Hussey did in 2010. And I know we'll get to that. But that was the exact same feeling that Pakistan supporters felt. And then Shaheen getting smashed in the end, right? Like one of the best bowlers in the tournament. And Wade is lap sweeping him for six. Three consecutive sixes, if I'm not wrong. So it was a very, very sad end to what had been an incredible tournament for Pakistan. I remember everyone was crying in the dressing room. I got emotional as well, but for different reasons, because I was extremely proud of that team, particularly Mohammad Rizwan. And at that point, you felt like Pakistan had their backs against the wall. Like world cricket wasn't really helping them out over here. And whatever they did in terms of bringing cricket back home was, you know, not being supported enough. Luckily, we haven't really experienced that since then. But yes, it brings back both emotions, that World Cup, of pride and of, I don't know, grief, because really, if there was one World Cup that Pakistan should have won, it was that one.
Yeah, I'm glad you kind of mentioned the total in that semi-final, because this was the Babar Azam Mohammad Rizwan tournament, right? This was when they dominated at the top of the order. No one could really dismiss either one of them, right? They got runs in plenty of the games.
If you remember, they used to have these graphics up for each batter where they display their weaknesses. And Babar Azam graphics said no apparent weakness. None. So that's where he was at.
Yeah, I mean, that was where they were, right, as a pair.
Hmm.
But coming back to that semi-final, I know hindsight is always 20-20, right? But that, I feel like that was the first time where people began thinking, you know, they're getting runs, but are they getting them quickly enough? Because like you mentioned, 170 odd was not going to be enough in those conditions, particularly in a tournament where you have this record of people chasing a lot of scores, right? What was the feeling like back home with that partnership at that point?
The feeling was great at that particular point. I mean, of course, that concern was raised that they could have gone a bit quicker up top. But the success that they had achieved, not just in that tournament, even leading up to it, ever since they became a pair, up until that point, they hadn't really put a foot wrong. That was probably the first time that they got runs. But again, the strike rates weren't high enough. And it was a bit of a failure if you look at it. And there was also, one segment of the fans which was saying that if Rizwan was coming straight out of the ICU, then did he have to play? But then again, knowing Rizwan, of course he did. This guy will play in any sort of condition, right? Sometimes it's cramps, sometimes it's acting, whatever. Sometimes he's outside, just out of the ICU, he'll still play. I think that had they not had that sort of a T20 World Cup campaign, maybe they wouldn't have persisted with them for so long because they knew how good they could be. And I felt like just the team felt like there was no reason to break this pair up. There are a lot of people who still believe that they shouldn't have been broken up as a pair. And the way modern cricket is evolving, you cannot have two anchors up top. That is the unfortunate reality. Maybe in a previous era, 10 years earlier, it would have worked like a charm. But
yeah,
I mean, the 2022 World Cup was evidence that this has got to stop.
Yeah, that was, I felt like, a very tricky situation, right? When you talk about these anchors, particularly in those two, their case, where they were getting a lot of runs. So it was very difficult to be critical of them as well because they were getting you the runs that you needed. I mean, if you look at the game against India, no one would have expected them to win by 10 wickets, right?
Also, Estelle, it's very important to remember that Pakistan doesn't get big opening stands. It's not a country that's used to that. So at that point, people felt that if these guys can get us to 80 for no loss at the 10 over mark, then you just go berserk in the final 10. And it kind of did make sense as well. Only now we know it's imperative to attack the power play.
Yeah. Okay. So we've done the 2021 and the 2022 tournaments where Pakistan were very good, right? Mm. Now we go to 2014 and 2016. There are only two group stage exits, right? And I think between the two tournaments, they had three wins. They struggled against, everyone who they came up against. And it's an interesting thing, right? You think that teams from the subcontinent would enjoy those kind of conditions in India and Bangladesh in 2014.
Yeah.
But they didn't really enjoy it, did they?
No. Which one do you want me to target first?
Let's go for 2016 first.
All right.
Because one win, I think.
Yeah. The 2016 World T20, which was held in India, I believe that was Pakistan's worst ever outing in the competition or the history of the competition. And I mean, the numbers suggest the same. They only managed to defeat Bangladesh, which was their tournament opener. Yep. And then they lost quite comprehensively to all of India, New Zealand and Australia. This was a team which had yesterday's cricketers, right? Stars which were far beyond their peak. Shahid Afridi was captain. And 2016 Shahid Afridi was not 2009 Shahid Afridi. Like, he was clearly past his prime. And he also made some weird statements as captain in the presses and all of that stuff, post-match interviews, which was also kind of like, I don't know, man. As someone who is Pakistani, you felt it was really unnecessary also at times. And there are better places to voice these things as opposed to, a post-match interview in a World Cup. But I don't know if you remember this, but there were some games in which the wicket was supposed to turn and Pakistan went in with an all-pace attack. So the strategy and the team selection was all over the place in this particular edition. And there was this one delivery in which Steve Smith completely left his stumps and went all the way, outside off stump. And Wahab Riaz was bowling. And rather than bowling, at the base of his stumps, he bowled to Steve Smith's legs and he hit him for six. And Glenn Maxwell in the dugout was absolutely losing his shit. That Wahab Riaz delivery to Steve Smith defines Pakistan's entire 2016 World T20 campaign. I don't feel like anything else needs to be said.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the videos that gets sent around social media, right? Quite often. Yeah. Moving on to 2014, two wins in that campaign, again in the subcontinent, another loss to India and a heavy loss to West Indies, who were doing quite well at that point.
Yeah.
Another campaign to forget after some really good ones leading up, right?
Yeah, I mean, 2014 and 2016 are the only two instances where Pakistan haven't made it to the semifinals, right? And 2016, they were god-awful. And when you looked at that squad, you did not even expect them to make it to the semifinals. That wasn't the case in 2014. Bangladesh suited them as a venue, right? Particularly with the sort of spinners Pakistan had. And this was the first time Pakistan failed to qualify for the semifinals in the history of the competition. In the aftermath, Mohammad Hafeez resigned as T20 skipper as well. And they were in a group of five with India, the West Indies, Australia and Bangladesh. Now, they did manage to defeat Australia and Bangladesh, right? It all, and I mean, we all know they keep losing to India up until that point, and it was a complete blowout versus them once again. The game versus the West Indies, it was, you know, a virtual quarterfinal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And a lot of people in Pakistan actually expected that team to defeat the West Indies because Syed Ajmal was still around, Afridi was still Afridi. I remember that, you know, there were a few other spinners. Maybe Zulfikar Babar at that point, yes, I can't quite remember. They were doing well. I think Zulfikar Babar had a great game versus Australia. And Mohammad Hafeez himself, you know, he was quite a formidable spinner. So when West Indies scored 160-odd, I don't think anyone in Pakistan saw that 80-odd all-out coming. And that totally deflated their campaign and knocked them out. So I feel like 2016 was a tournament in which you expected them to do poorly. 2014 was a tournament in which you actually expected them to make the semifinals and perhaps even lift the trophy because A, they were spotless in T20 World Cups up until that point. And that was quite a decent team, which had all of those weapons and ammunition to do well in like a country and on surfaces that Bangladesh had to offer. So yes, I think that was an underwhelming campaign for the men in green.
Remember that cricket is a funny game. 100 years before we protected our head, players looked after their groins. So don't be as stupid as old cricketers. Protect your computer now. NordVPN is the protection I use when facing cyber shortballs or when rights issues try to dismiss me. Geo-block so you can watch all the cricket you want. Grab your NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/Kimber.
Yeah, definitely. I think with Pakistan, it's like, you know, there's a meme. I keep bringing up memes in these podcasts. Anyway, like never let them know what to expect. And Pakistan is, it just embodies that, right? Like you said, they had a decent team. They had a team that could have done well in those conditions, didn't manage to do so. In 2016, they didn't really have, I mean, they had an aging team. I think it's fair to say that at that point, the team was in a bit of a transition, right?
They were delaying the transition. That was the issue.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why hasn't Shadab Khan played that World Cup, for instance? You know, stuff like that. I mean, of course, Shadab Khan only came into prominence in the PSL that followed. But you get what I mean, right? The Afridis and all of that crop of players. It felt like they had stuck around for too long at that point in 2016.
Yeah, and that tournament went exactly as expected.
Yeah.
So let's go back further then to 2012, which another semi-final, right? And a semi-final I was at. But before we get to that game, right? Let's talk about Nasir Jamshed.
Yeah.
That is a big name looking at, I mean, going through the games that Pakistan played in this tournament. That's a name that kept cropping up again and again and again. He got a lot of runs in that tournament.
Yeah, no, he was really, really good. He was peaking at that point. His fitness also hadn't gone to the dogs just yet. I don't know if you remember Nasir Jamshed in the 2015 ODI World Cup. He was dropping catches left, right and center. He could not buy a run and he had ballooned. I've seen Nasir Jamshed recently. Of course, he's gone through his own issues with spot fixing and all of that and copped a ban. He did show remorse, which is something that not a lot of Pakistan cricketers who have had corrupt pasts do. But he looked fit now. But that tournament was his tournament. Him and Imran Nazir were the antithesis to Babar and Rizwan, weren't they? And anyone who hasn't watched Imran Nazir bat in T20Is for Pakistan or any sort of team that he played for in the format, you've missed out on life, really. That's just how electric an opening batter he was. Both of them did well. I mean, they had an extremely strong side. Pakistan were one of the pre-tournament favorites in 2012. And again, Sri Lanka is a destination which has suited Pakistan. Think of the 2011 ODI World Cup where Pakistan played all of their games in the build-up to the semi-final in Mohali in Sri Lanka. Maybe there was one odd game in Bangladesh, but they were dominating. And they beat Sri Lanka in Sri Lanka, right, in that World Cup in which Shoaib bowled or cleaned up Mahela. But I feel like that was another tournament that maybe they should have done better in. I know that they made the semi-final, but if you look at that team, Umar Gul was still very good. Shahid Afridi, Saeed Ajmal, that bowling attack, right, on its own was, you know, one to fear. And the conditions also suited them. Then also they trounced both of New Zealand and Bangladesh in round one, which had never happened up until this point. They always lost a game in the first round, but now they'd won both of them. And then, do you remember the South Africa game? The South Africa game was hilarious.
I don't recall it, yeah.
So South Africa posted 130-odd. Pakistan looked like sure shot winners. Then there was a collapse, right? Big time collapse. Pakistan had no business winning that game there on. And Umar Akmal was, you know, occupying one end. Umar Gul comes in, goes bang, bang, bang. Somehow Pakistan win that game. And that victory is the reason Pakistan qualified for the Super 8s, really. Mm. Because sure, they defeated Australia and these two World Cups, 2012 and 2014, are two World Cups where they actually beat Australia quite comfortably. But they did lose to India in, again, what was an extremely one-sided game. I was watching that India game in one of those University of Waterloo halls with both Indian and Pakistani fans. And the Indian guys were just literally up on our throats, you know, and celebrating. It was bad. But then again, that South Africa win got them to the Super 8s because the Australia win was comfortable. Then there was that semi-final versus Sri Lanka in which you were there. And I can only imagine the scenes in Colombo, was it? Yeah.
It was in Colombo, yeah.
Why don't you share some of those scenes with us? Because why not?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the... I mean, this was before I was in this industry, right?
Mm.
I was young, looking, like, trying to go for as many games as possible. I remember we got tickets off the black market at, like, about 5 or 10 times the price. And sadly, couldn't get tickets for the final, but the semi was the one that we were able to go for. The atmosphere was incredible post-game. I mean, you were talking about, you know, opening the sunroof and putting the Pakistan flag out and, you know, that type of atmosphere. But imagine that streets of Colombo, right? Yeah. And I remember at that, like, we didn't have a vehicle to go home. So we had to get a taxi, right? Me and my two siblings, my older brother and sister. So we were walking on the streets with our flags around our shoulders and every vehicle that passed would, you know, honk at you and wave the flags. And it was that kind of atmosphere. It was a massive win for Sri Lanka. But of course, the stage is for you, Behram, and Pakistan, right? Just getting back to that bowling attack, like you mentioned, right? Pakistan have, I think, we spoke about this one again on our Overthrows and Uncovered podcast about how bowlers win your tournaments. And if you look at Pakistan, them being consistently so good in every World Cup, barring those two, has got to be about that bowling attack, right? And in this one of my favorite bowling pairings ever, right? Saeed Ajmal, Umar Gul, at their almost absolute peak, right?
Yeah.
They were incredible to watch.
Absolutely. I mean, even if Pakistan had like 140 on the board, spectators expected them to defend those totals. And they did defend those totals on the regular. That was the weird part with Gul, Ajmal, Afridi, Hafiz. That quartet, in all of limited overs cricket at that point, regardless of the surface even at times, because good luck playing Saeed Ajmal wherever you play him, right, at his peak. And Umar Gul was a menace with the ball in the death overs. His Yorkers were to die for. He also had good variations. That's why I feel like they should have done better in 2012. And I know Sri Lanka were the hosts. They had the home crowd advantage, the home ground and conditions advantage. But Pakistan restricted them to 139.
Yeah.
Everyone expected Pakistan to chase down 140. But then Rangana Herath, who has spoiled a fair few parties for Pakistan over the years across formats. He was the one who took 3 wickets and denied them a place in the final. But you know, I'm not sure if you know this or not, Estelle, but Sri Lanka is one of those countries which is much loved in Pakistan. Losing to them is not the worst thing in the world over here. Of course, a semi-final defeat hurts. But, you know, I remember when Sri Lanka won the 2014 World Cup, Pakistan was elated. In 96, Lahore went mad, you know, for Rana Tunga's team. And the entire Gaddafi Stadium was rooting for them. So, you know, when it comes to countries or island nations like Sri Lanka, New Zealand, even the West Indies is much loved in Pakistan, it kind of softens the blow. But ultimately, it is a semi-final defeat. And again, I mean, 140-odd or 140 on the dot in that instance. Pakistan should have chased that. They should not have fallen short. And I believe that that is another one of those big opportunities missed. Because had they defeated Sri Lanka, who knows? I mean, the West Indies in those conditions, Pakistan could have won that tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. It was their game to lose, I think. Wasn't the easiest condition. The only thing I would say is it wasn't the easiest track to bat on because it was very slow and it was turning. I remember Mahela Jayawardhan, I think, played a superb knock up at the top of the order and no one really could get going. But one guy who I want to talk about as well is Umar Akmal, right? The prince or the prince who was promised. There was a period where he was living up to that promise, right? In this game, he almost brought them back. He had a little cameo at the end. Couldn't finish the job, but he was in this tournament, I thought, and in the two preceding or the one preceding, he was kind of living up to that promise.
If you look at the tournaments in 2010, 2012 and 2014, Umar Akmal was a plus batter. And when he came onto the scene, that was also in Sri Lanka, by the way. There was an ODI series going on in which he debuted as, I don't know, a 19, 18-year-old. And he scored a ton in his second game, right? So we all knew he was talented. And the talent was evident if you just watch him bat, the way his bat flowed, the way he hit all like shots all across the park. It seemed like this kid was destined for greatness. And I mean, he looked like a bit of an upgrade on Kamran Akmal. But now, if you look at their careers, you'd probably take Kamran over Umar. That's where we stand. Again, I feel like he had all the potential. He also did really well in T20 cricket up to a certain point. Like he had some clutch knocks and he was playing modern day T20 cricket before it became modern, right? He had that impetus and played with that sort of strike rate and he could take down both pace and spin. That was also an important, you know, facet to his game. But I feel like just a lack of professionalism, not taking care of his fitness and one very... what would I call it? Glaring mistake that many Pakistan cricketers make is that once they get to that level where they're playing for Pakistan, they enter this comfort zone. They feel like they're good enough to reach here and then they stop evolving. I feel like that's what Umar Akmal kind of fell prey to. And then he was the sort of character who started complaining, got into fights. Mickey Arthur told him off. There was lots of drama. And now, honestly, I don't even know where his head's at anymore. He's a TikTok star currently. I hope... You know, he's successful in that. Sometimes I also feel a bit bad for him because he is the butt of all online trolls, right? Like that's basically, and he gives them that ammunition. But I feel like people sometimes take it too far. Again, a talent wasted, someone who could really have been something for Pakistan. But he is one of those, you know, could have been cricketers who really never lived up to their potential.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he was one of those guys who... You could just see, like you mentioned, right? You watch him play, you could tell this guy has something in him. Unfortunately, never lived up to that.
Yeah. Okay, you love so memes, getting... right? You love memes. Go look for Umar Akmal with a grape. That's the one you really need to see.
Okay, I will do that. Right. So now we're getting into kind of the business end of these competitions. I know they reached the semis in 2012, but you have to say... 7, 9 and 10 were really Pakistan's peak, right? They were brilliant in all three tournaments. Unfortunately, couldn't get over the line in two of them. Let's go to 2010. Another fabulous bowling attack, right?
Yeah.
You got Syed Ajmal. You had Afridi bowling well, right? Again, heartbreak at the hands of Australia. And I just want to go back to that. Start with that semi-final, right? And everyone talks about why did they bowl a spinner in those last four overs, right? Ajmal had two overs of the last four. What's your take on that?
Ajmal was the best spinner in the world at that point, right? And this was a Caribbean World Cup as well. I don't think Afridi, the captain at that time, was wrong to give him those overs at the death. I think like it was the right ploy. And you've got to doff your hat to Mike Hussey, right? I recently saw this post on Twitter in which Star Sports ranked their 10 best T20 World Cup performances of all time. And I did not see Michael Hussey's unbeaten 60 over there. And I was like, seriously? That is arguably one of the best T20 knocks of all time. Australia needed, what, 23-ish runs? Something like that in the final over? Mm-hmm. He smashed four sixes off Saeed Ajmal, the best spinner in the world at that point, who was peaking. And Pakistan were defending champions in that tournament as well. Now, I will say this. That tournament was held less than a year from Pakistan's title win. So they were kind of done dirty over there in a way. Not done dirty, but it was not ideal, right? And I mean, there was a rumor at that point that they've done this so that they can have a T20 World Cup in 2020. Funny how COVID came in and didn't let that happen either. but yeah, I'm not sure. Though, don't quote me on this. I'm not sure if this was the actual reason, but I did hear like these rumors back in the day. But if you think of 2010 as a whole, I'll come back to the semi-final, right? This came after all of the Yunus Khan captaincy controversy. If you remember, Yunus won them the 2009 World T20, then took them to the semis of the Champions Trophy 2009. They beat India in that Champions Trophy as well. They had that game versus Australia in which they nearly defended 200 and the ball was reversing. Australia won by a solitary wicket. And then versus New Zealand, I think it was Yunus who dropped Grant Elliott's catch. And that cost Pakistan. But it was a lot of, you know, classic Pakistan dressing room drama in the build-up to that World Cup. That's how Afridi became captain, right? And they all kind of took an oath over the Holy Quran that they want to remove Yunus as captain. It was that dramatic. It was bad. And going into that World Cup, I don't know what the, you know, team chemistry was like, how they were feeling about each other and all of that stuff. But, you know, I don't even think they did that well. You know, if they look at that tournament, right? They lost to Australia in the first round. Yeah.
They won two games out of five and somehow scraped their way through to the semis because of net run rate. I think that was owing to England absolutely thrashing New Zealand and South Africa in that round, right?
This was KP's World Cup, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I remember it as. And of course, Hussey is one of those memories
bad
as well.
Memories.
Yeah, they also lost to Australia in the first round. That's the game in which Aamir had like five wickets in an over, but some of them were run out. But they were bad in that game. Then they did beat Bangladesh to secure qualification to the Super 8s. And in the Super 8s, they lost to England in a game which England completely like massacred them. The New Zealand game was tight. They lost like a run or something, right? I remember they needed three off the final ball and couldn't get it. Ian O'Brien was bowling. No one probably even remembers Ian O'Brien, right? So that was a game that broke a lot of hearts in Pakistan because they like the fans felt that they should have defeated New Zealand. And New Zealand is also one of those teams that Pakistan somehow always manages to defeat in World Cups, right? Mm. So they weren't ready for that. But then there was that game versus South Africa, which they won. And somehow, again, South Africa is always one of those teams that Pakistan managed to defeat one way or another. And what that meant was that because England had been so amazing, they had three wins out of three in the Super 8 stage, that all the other teams were at one win each. And Pakistan had the best run rate. So they kind of scraped through to the semis. But then that semi, do you remember how well the Akmals batted? Dirk Nannes was taken apart by Umar Akmal in that game. Pakistan, at a time where 190 odd was a huge score, scored 191. And no way in hell would anyone at the halfway mark have imagined that Pakistan are going to lose this game.
This is brought to you by Cricket 8. Cricket intelligence for you every day.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the numbers, right? They're Australia 105 for 5 in the 13th over and then eventually needing 38 of the last 10 deliveries. I think Hussey scored 34 of his last 8 deliveries or something insane like that.
Yeah.
So just if you look at it, Pakistan had no, I mean, they shouldn't have been in a dominant position in that game because they'd done so badly right throughout the tournament, right? Yeah. But suddenly they turn up and score 191. Like you mentioned, this is 2010.
Yeah.
190 is a massive score.
Absolutely.
It's not a time where, you know, you have teams scoring 220 and 240 for fun, like we saw in the most recently concluded IPL, right? You didn't have those massive totals. And if you did, they were defended more often than not. And Australia, up until that time, I feel, weren't really taking T20 cricket that seriously, were they? They were, they had the crazy, you know, weird kits, which you love. But
no, that was 2007, the one that I love.
I mean, they had the weird, you know, sleeveless type stuff and all of that going on, but they weren't really that serious about T20 cricket, I feel. And then they pull this off, and all the criticism falls on Syed Ajmal. When you think about it, he was their best bowler all tournament, in a tournament where they struggled. So, I mean, you just have to hand it to Hussey in that situation, right?
Absolutely.
Just unbelievable, otherworldly stuff. I think Clark called him a freak, and it was absolutely deserved, like, in the best way, because what he did there was absolutely nuts, right, in the last couple of overs. Yeah. So, that's
I remember that, actually. It was the post-match interview or whatever in which all the Aussies were ecstatic, and Michael Clarke just said, Michael Hussey is a freak of nature, something like that. And he is a freak of nature to do that to Syed Ajmal. That is the worst over Ajmal has probably bowled in his career. And you've got to feel for him a bit, right? Like, whenever people think of him, people do kind of always resort to that over, whereas his legacy is far greater than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, just as a neutral thinking about it, well, not really neutral because I love Australia, but just thinking about it, that 2010 World Cup, nobody remembers except for that knock and that spell, right? Yeah. Ajmal, I think 2 overs for 11 runs, and then he ends up with 4 overs, 46.
Yeah.
So just, I mean, to round it off, incredible knock by Hussey. Nothing much that Ajmal could have done, right?
Even the English public does not remember that T20 World Cup, right? No one remembers that Paul Collingwood, of all people, has lifted the T20 World Cup trophy. So yeah, I mean, that was the highlight. Hussey was the highlight, 100%.
Hussey was the highlight, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now we're getting to Behram's favorite tournament, I'm sure. And the one that I have tried to erase from my memory for the longest time, 2009 was all about Shahid Afridi. Am I right?
Oh, yes, you are. Just quickly, though, I want to share this one anecdote from the previous one. 2010, when that Ajmal over happened, my brother and I were really excited and pumped. And that over just happened, and we were just not even looking at each other, not speaking, not doing anything. We were just like, we went to sleep. That's what we did. But 2009, yes, one of the greatest moments in my life as a Pakistan fan. Of course, at that point, I was, 15, right? So really, really young. And Pakistan, again, were slow starters in that T20 World Cup. If you remember, they lost to England in the first round, but defeated the Netherlands. Weirdly enough, England lost to the Netherlands as well. And luckily for Pakistan, net run rate didn't screw them over back then. And then in the Super 8s, they lost to Sri Lanka quite comprehensively as well. Like, I think they couldn't even get close to Sri Lanka's total of 150 odd, right? So they looked like a team which was on their way out. And I don't know if you remember this or not, but that is when Yasser Arafat was, you know, announced injured, and Abdul Razak comes in after a while to play for Pakistan. That was literally the turning point.
Yeah, and to get to that, right? I believe he was not in the scene because of the ICL, because he had been involved in the ICL. So it was kind of one of those, you know, fate had determined kind of moments, right? Because you don't have Razak in that tournament. It's possible that you're not going all the way. I mean, you can talk about, you had Umar Gul, was fabulous, probably the best bowler for Pakistan overall in that tournament. Ajmal was superb as well. Yep. Afridi had an all-round insane tournament. But those little things, the Abdul Razak, and I think just if we go to the final, right? I know a lot of people talk about Afridi's performance, but to me, the turning point of that game was Amir getting Dilshan out. Because Dilshan had absolutely dominated that tournament. He had 300 plus runs. Nobody else was even close. I don't think anyone else got even 250, right? Absolutely dominated the tournament.
Yeah.
And then he's gone in the first over for a duck. So I think that those little things that happened for Pakistan really turned things around.
Yeah, I think for Pakistan, you know, as a team, it was Razak coming in that completely changed everything, because Razak with the new ball was probably the best he's ever been with the new ball, if I'm being honest. And he was someone who had a lot of experience playing in England as well. So that was very beneficial. I mean, so did Yasser Arafat, but Razak is the biggest superstar for Pakistan and probably the more talented cricketer as well. Razak took 3 for 20 in that final, took early wickets versus Sri Lanka as well. So yes, 100%, he had a major role to play. And very correctly, you've mentioned over here that that was Dilshan's tournament. That was the tournament where the Dil scoop was the highlight, right? He was hitting that all over, like, not all over the park, specifically one place or one direction over the keeper's head. And we haven't really even seen the Dil scoop after that. So that's something that actually raises its novelty factor. And then Chris Gayle was another batter. Like, Gayle and Dilshan, those were the guys who were dominating in that World Cup. And then Shahid Afridi comes in and he says, not today. This one's mine. And Varun actually pulled out some stats for us, for Afridi in this tournament as well. He wasn't player of the tournament. Dilshan was. He was actually player of the tournament in the previous one, in the inaugural World T20 in 2007. But in this tournament, Afridi ended up with 176 runs at a true average of 13 and a true strike rate of 24, which is phenomenal. And then he had 11 wickets at a true economy rate of 1.57, which is insane. And a true wickets number of 0.53. So, come knockouts, it was just Shahid Afridi. That's it. I know Razak played a crucial part in the final. But people will only remember Shahid Afridi with a star man pose, hitting those runs off a leg by, actually. That's what Bumble said, right? Big man, big game, it's a leg by, who cares? It was, like, look, again, I want to build a bit of context. The 2009 Lahore attacks, you know, were very fresh in the memories of all of cricket aficionados and enthusiasts at that point. It was something that had hurt Pakistan deeply. I remember I was in school when I found out that that had happened, and it absolutely crushed me, right? And the thought that you might not remain a cricketing nation anymore is scary when you're a Pakistani or Indian or Sri Lankan or anyone from South Asia, because cricket is just that big a deal in this part of the world. And everyone kind of thought that this might just be the end of Pakistan, because what are they going to do? And they go on and win the goddamn World T20. So in a weird way, this victory meant a whole lot more than the other ones. Yeah. I know recency bias comes in. Pakistan defeated India in the final of the 2017 Champions Trophy, so people might remember that. 92 fans will remember Imran Khan's great team and their comeback run. But this World Cup, it was bigger than just cricket. It meant that Pakistan is resilient. It's here to stay. And that's what we've seen from this country. Look, things aren't particularly amazing right now either. But the resilience factor really is what keeps Pakistan cricket intact. They might not be the best team in the world, but somehow they are always relevant. And I feel like you've got to, like, give them, you know, a lot of credit for that. Kudos to Pakistan for somehow managing that, because if you're not playing cricket at home, the top countries aren't playing you all that frequently. Sri Lanka is a country that Pakistan actually owe a huge debt to, because even after the attacks which were on the Sri Lankan team, Pakistan, Sri Lanka played each other every year. Proper full series. I remember for like 5 years in between, that's all we saw. But it was a great Sri Lankan team, right? It was Sangha's team, Mahela's team. So, I mean, that was good quality cricket as well. It wasn't just like, you know, series that didn't matter, because they did. And it was a rivalry that I believe... It's not a rivalry which is heated, but it is enjoyed by either side of fans, I feel. So that tournament was a culmination also of that rivalry in a way, because Sri Lanka was a great team at that point, right? They were probably, you know, having a better tournament than Pakistan, if you think about it. They'd even knocked out the West Indies in the semi.
Yeah, actually, Pakistan was not having a good tournament. I mean, looking back, they could have been knocked out twice, right? They lost to England, and then they needed to win against Netherlands, because Netherlands had defeated England, right?
Yeah.
So that was the first point of, okay, are we going to get knocked out in the first round? Then in the second round also, they lost to Sri Lanka, beat New Zealand, and then they had to beat Ireland to go through, right?
So when they lost to Sri Lanka, they had to win every game. They had to win four games in a row to win the tournament. And that New Zealand game is what completely changed the complexion of Pakistan's campaign. I remember they cleaned or bowled them out for 90-odd. Umar Gul's 5 for 6. Yeah, that was probably, or still is probably, one of the best spells we've ever seen in the competition.
It was actually the first 5-wicket haul in T20 International. So,
yeah,
incredible stuff.
And it was like, I was awestruck watching it. We were in a hill station up in Murray, and we actually didn't have a lot of hope. We were like, if they lose today, they're out. But if they win today, you'd bet your money that they'd beat Ireland and somehow they'll make it to the semifinals. And I think that New Zealand win really spurred that team on. It gave them some sort of confidence and galvanized them. And that's how Pakistan win tournaments. Something's got to galvanize them. They don't win it when they win five games in a row in the group stages. Then they lose in the semifinals. But when they somehow dramatically make it to the semis, you can almost be afraid of that particular Pakistan. You would not want to face that kind of Pakistan, right? Just even in the 2022 World Cup, right? In that semifinal versus New Zealand probably thinking, why? Why is this happening to us? And of course, the better team in England won in the end. But I remember that New Zealand game vividly, and it was great fun. Ireland, you expected Pakistan to win. South Africa were the favorites to win that tournament. Everyone thought that, of course, they're not going to, you know, let this one slip. They're going to overcome Pakistan. And Pakistan had even scored 150 or something, right? But then somehow they defended 150. And I remember Shahid Afridi's spell. I think it was 2-for-16. And he got Gibbs and De Villiers in quick succession. That's where Pakistan kind of had that game in their claws. And Afridi had even scored a 50 prior in the same game. Coming up to bat in the order, first drop. He did that in both the semi and the final. He batted at number 3. He scored 50s in both. And yes, I mean, the star man Afridi pose is synonymous with the 2009 T20 World Cup. It had to take a great deal of effort for that pose to oust the Dil Scoop. But he somehow managed that.
Yeah, he was, I mean, insane. And like you've mentioned, like Pakistan and Sri Lanka have a kind of a friendly rivalry, right?
Yeah.
And this was a tournament where you just felt like, okay, Dilshan's going to get runs and Sri Lanka is going to win this because Pakistan hadn't had such a great tournament, like we mentioned, right? But the thing is, Behram, I think, you know, coming from South Asian backgrounds, right, both of us, you have to, when you think of our teams, yes, the emotional baggage can be a pressure, but it can also galvanize teams, right? Like you mentioned, right? The 2009 attacks in Lahore and how teams were not playing Pakistan at that time. All of that culminated in this win. And I know Sri Lanka's had similar situations in 96, 2014, right? They've had, it can be a weight, but it also can be what spurs you on. So I think that campaign was such a, you know, inspiring campaign, I'm sure, for a lot of Pakistani fans as well, because of, you know, the number of times they had to kind of wake up from the dead. And like you mentioned, South Africa were favorites in that tournament. Yeah. And in conditions that suited them, they had Langeveld, who was brilliant, I think, right throughout. He was at his peak at that point. Just to come out against a team of that caliber and Afridi to give them that kind of performance, there was no stopping them from that point onwards, right?
They also had Wayne Parnell, who was the best he'd ever been. If you look at Parnell's entire career, the 2009 World T20 is where I feel like he was at the peak of his powers. And I remember that moment where Afridi blew a kiss to Callis. That became like a viral moment. And you mentioned how Amir set up Dilshan in the final. That was such a key moment, right? I mean, he was trying to sort of scoop him, not entirely a Dil Scoop, but he was trying to attack that fine leg area, and he caught the or fell short and found the fine or short fine leg fielder. There were all those little moments. Afridi cleaning up Udana at a time where you felt like, okay, this might just be it. And then Sangha taking the game deep, right? All of a sudden you were like, oh my God, like, is this going to be one of those dramatic finals where Sri Lanka kind of have gotten enough over here? Even in the chase, before Afridi hit Murali for those sixes, right? Sri Lanka won that game.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that is the high of this podcast. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not sure whether you would term the next one as a low, but the inaugural World Cup 2007, Pakistan have actually quite a good tournament and two fabulous games against India.
Yeah.
But they come short both times. Let's talk about the first one in the first round, right? A bowl out, ironically, won by Indian batters, right?
Yes.
Let's talk about it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It was crazy. I remember Mohammad Asif's spell with the new ball, and you were like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, this guy might just be the best Pakistan bowler we've seen since Wasim. And he probably might have even been a better bowler because his wrist position was such that you couldn't really read the ball, and he was the pioneer of the wobble seam delivery as well, right? Which Jimmy Anderson went on to master. Mm. Mohammad Asif was special. If only he'd been more disciplined, not a corrupt bastard, and also not a drug addict. Because I don't know if you know this, but he was caught with opium at the Dubai airport and he was banned from the UAE as well. So, very, very problematic career. And one of those geniuses who I guess could never understand or value his own, you know, potential and worth. So, also, you guys can see how hot it is. Look at this shirt. It's crazy. because I can't turn the AC on because it's noisy. But anyway. You mentioned that India game. Again, I'll build some context. Go a few months earlier, 2007 ODI World Cup. Neither of those teams qualify for the, what was it, Super 8, Super 10? I can't even remember. Everyone qualified but them, right? Bangladesh and Ireland qualified ahead of them. And that was one of those things that broke the spirit of the subcontinent. And it was even not beneficial for the World Cup, right? Because everyone is looking forward to that India-Pakistan game, which never happened. I remember it was a Bangladesh-Ireland game. And it was a tumultuous period in a way that Pakistan also lost Bob Woolmer, right? And then there was a captaincy change. Shoaib Malik was the captain. Jeff Lawson was the coach. They beat Scotland up front. And even though they lost to India in the bowl out, right? The game was tied. They played really good cricket. And again, they kind of botched it in that run chase.
Yeah.
But then again, you felt confident about this team because they had, you know, done well in those first two games. And they were unbeaten in the Super 8s still. I remember the Sri Lanka game. I also like that Sri Lanka kit, by the way, the light bluish one. do you remember that Sohail Tanveer delivery to Jayasurya?
I think so.
Yeah.
Let's talk about
that's
it.
That's where Sohail Tanveer kind of announced himself, right?
Yeah. Didn't he make his debut in that tournament?
Yeah, he was this wild card. I remember someone, maybe Akib Javed, said this, that he's that person that's, you know, going to win us games. No one will expect what he has to deliver. And he is the trump card. And he was really. So, Sohail Tanveer was amazing. Left arm, you know, bowls in the power play, bowls at the death, can swing it. If anyone can go to YouTube and just watch that dismissal of Jayasurya. And this is like Jayasurya, who's still pretty good, right?
Yeah.
He's still whacking it all over the park. That kind of set the tone for the entire Super 8s. Because Pakistan was, what, defending 180-odd in that game. They comfortably did it versus Sri Lanka. They defeated an Australian team, which at that point, people thought they couldn't defeat, right? Regardless of the format. That's what that Australia was. And I know that Zimbabwe had defeated them in this tournament. But going into that game, you felt like Pakistan cannot win this. This is probably going to be an Australian victory. But they restricted Australia to 160-something and then they chased it down fairly comfortably. And then I think the last game was against Bangladesh, which was a comfortable win. They came into the semi-finals as one of the favorites to win that tournament, weirdly enough. Even though Australia was still in it, their semi was with India. But Pakistan's semi-final was versus New Zealand, which again was a one-sided affair. I remember Pakistan's Masoor doing those cartwheels when Pakistan won that game and came into the final. And I mean, probably one of the best, maybe even the best World Cup or T20 World Cup final we've ever seen. Pakistan versus India, 2007.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to go past that as one of the big moments, right? And we did a quick picks episode on it as well, where we discussed like the moments of T20 World Cups. And this was obviously number one because you put it into context, forget the India-Pakistan bit, right? This is the first tournament of its kind.
Yeah.
And everything that's followed has been a result of this, right? I just want to go back. I mean, if you look at the tournament as a whole, you summarized it really well. Pakistan were really good, except that they couldn't beat India, right? They lost the bowl out in the first round and then lost the final. Apart from that, in between, they were really good. They were dominant. They were able to, go past teams with ease. Again, it was I think the bowling attack that really stood up right throughout.
This was Umar Gul with long hair. That's the Umar Gul we're talking about. He cleaned up Dhoni with an absolute peach, I remember.
Yeah, he was incredible. You couldn't, I mean, he had, I think, probably three really good World Cups, right? Mm. He was a guy who Pakistan turned to, but overall, you had a lot of contributions, right? But when we come to the batting, and we're going to talk about the villain of, I think, the story, when you think about that 2007 World Cup. But I want to talk about how well Misbah played, not just in the final, but even in the game where there was the bowl out, right? He brought Pakistan back from the dead.
Yeah.
And then really kind of panicked over the last over, right? Didn't he?
It's really unfortunate that Misbah is remembered for that scoop, or even that entire T20 World Cup, the inaugural one in 2007, is kind of synonymous with the Misbah scoop. Because whenever you'll see any sort of replay footage or an ad on TV, you'll see Misbah scooping Joginder Sharma and Srisanth holding onto that catch. And I mean, he had hit Joginder Sharma down the ground for six, right? Just a few deliveries earlier.
Yeah.
And it was so dramatic. I remember in that final, Pakistan did fairly well to restrict India to, what was it, 150? Something like that. And I mean, credit to Irfan Pathan as well. He bowled a brilliant spell to dismantle, you know, Pakistani batters up front. But I remember there was that run out of Imran Nazir. And Imran Nazir had hit Srisanth for 15 and over.
Yeah.
That is where I feel like people need to, you know, narrow down. And if you really want to pinpoint one phase or one moment in that game where Pakistan lost that game, it was Imran Nazir's run out, because he couldn't run. He had a runner on, and if he'd stayed on for 10 more deliveries, it was done. The run rate would have died, right? Again, if you guys have not seen Imran Nazir bat, you need to go and watch some highlights, guys. Like, this guy, I cannot tell you how ahead of his time he was. And Misbah did bring them back from the dead. I remember those three sixes versus Harbhajan, right? That's when you felt like, oh, can Pakistan actually do this? Is Misbah ul Haq going to be the hero? And then on the final delivery of the penultimate over, Mohammad Asif edged one for four. All of a sudden, you need 13 runs in the final over. The first ball is a wide. Then Misbah hits a six. Six off four, you'd always kind of put your money that the batting team will get it, but just one wicket in the kitty. That's what cost Pakistan. Look, Misbah was playing that ramp scoop thing or shot to perfection. That was his pet shot. He had scored a lot of runs off of it. I can understand why he went for that shot. Sure, maybe he should have gone down the ground in hindsight, because no one remembers Joginder Sharma, do they? Even though he won the World Cup. He became a police officer afterwards. And I've been told that after that final, he got a lot of marriage proposals. That was his life, right?
So, thanks to Misbah.
Yeah, thanks to Misbah. I still remember those scenes where Misbah was just, you know, in agony, and like kind of had his head on the handle of his bat and was just there while India celebrated. And of course, it was a tough one to stomach as a fan. I am, what, 13 at this point, right? I'm a very young fan. There are three times that I've cried in my life as a Pakistan cricket fan. One was when Inzi retired, right?
Mm.
One was this game. And weirdly enough, that's two times in the same year. And then one was when after the game, like after the Australia semi-final in 2021, like a day after that, I just kind of broke down because I just had immense love for that team. So that was, those weren't tears of anguish. They were tears of pride. And that one hurt. And I mean, I'm sure it just felt, I mean, it felt just as good for an Indian supporter. And that is the moment that kind of defines the future of the sport. I mean, it's that Misbah scoop and the rest is history. Here we are, where T20 cricket is not a gimmick. It is serious business. And we're all eagerly waiting for this tournament to begin. And I mean, this is the best format to globalize the game as well. Now we're looking at a 20-team tournament, Estelle, coming up. And you'd be, you know, honest to say that on any given day, anyone can beat anyone, right?
Absolutely.
Which is the beauty of this format. And I feel like that first World Cup, even though Pakistan lost that final and our hearts were broken, it is a very important inflection point, you know, in the history of our sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've discussed this, I think, in multiple podcasts where if India doesn't win there, do things turn out the way they have, right? You know, they weren't taking it too seriously.
Yeah.
Senior players didn't I mean, felt like it would be a good opportunity for the younger players to go for the World Cup. They weren't really convinced, right?
Mm.
And then to go on to win, and then the IPL is born out of that. And,
yep.
you know, everything that's happened from that point onwards. It's funny, actually, when you think about it, right? Getting back to Pakistan.
Mm.
The type of team they had, and to say that that team was successful over a long period of time in T20 cricket.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about the players, right? You think Kamran Akmal, Yunis Khan, Shoaib Malik, Misbah ul Haq, not really renowned. Like, your first thought isn't that they're bashers, right? When you think about them. But they had some incredible years for Pakistan in those World Cups, right? 2007, 2009, 10, even 12, right?
Yeah.
Still going strong. And then you had the bowling attack. Umar Gul, Mohammad Amir, Mohammad Asif in that one. Was it the... Yeah, in that tournament. Saeed Ajmal, Shahid Afridi, even Yasir Arafat, I thought, had a really good tournament or two, right?
Throw Hafiz in there. It's important to throw Mohammad Hafiz in there, yeah.
Mohammad Hafiz opening the batting and then also with his off spin, right?
Hmm. Opening the bowling at times, right?
Yeah, that was not, like, if you look back from 2024, you hear those names, you're not thinking this is a great T20 side. I mean, bowling aside, right? You're talking about when you talk about the batting. But they were so good. And in that 2007 World Cup, no one knew really what to expect from the tournament and how things were going to go, right? And it was almost poetic that you would have an India-Pakistan tie in the first round and you have this bowl out. And then you have that final to close things off the first tournament.
Yeah. Definitely, both fantastic games.
Both great games. And like you said, setting that tone for what was going to happen to cricket, that was kind of the catalyst to what we are seeing now, right? So, just looking back, it was an incredible tournament. Going through all the tournaments that we have now, we've gone through every tournament. Mm. What are your, I mean, barring the championship, obviously that's the high, right, for a Pakistan fan. What are the most memorable moments you can think of if you look at all the tournaments?
Well, of course, the title win is there and the India win in 2021 is obviously there. And that entire tournament, honestly, like, I feel like it's probably my second favorite tournament ever, right? The first one, Pakistan played brilliant cricket. They fell short in the end, but I think they had every reason to hold their heads high. If anything, you were talking about that early 2010s and late 2000s team. That team was playing T20 cricket properly, right? Now you've got a team where you have that fear. So it's weird how the tables have turned in that regard. And that South Africa victory in 2012 that I talked about, in which Gul came out and smashed those sixes, that's right up there. I feel like the Australia wins in 2012 and 2014 was special because you're defeating Australia. Even the inaugural tournament, defeating Australia felt just, it hit you different, right? And I know you can relate because whoever had seen Australia in the 2000s would know just how dominant they were, right? You wouldn't even care for the format. You'd be like, how are we going to beat these guys? And yes, 2022 also comes into the mix. But my favorite moment was probably Netherlands defeating South Africa. And the South Africa win. Pakistan defeating South Africa was also really special. Yeah. 2016, I have no good memories to recollect. And you could probably make a case or the same case for 2014.
Mm.
I think that Pakistan have done quite well in the history of this competition. They do have the best record when it comes to semi-final qualification success. But yes, very, very interesting how they used to have a dynamic team, which felt like it was ahead of the times at that point in the late 2000s and early 2010s. And now you're looking at a team which is stacked with talent. They're not short on talent, but the brand of cricket that they've been playing is, or at least seems, a bit outdated. So quite the contrast.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up because if we've seen anything in these tournaments, it's that sometimes Pakistan, you can't quite tell, not sometimes, you can't really tell when they're going to be that, you know, dominant team, right? They could come out and have a great tournament this time around. So now that we've gone through what's happened in the past, let's look at 2024. What would be a good tournament for Pakistan? And what would you predict is going to happen? What would you expect to happen?
I don't think, unfortunately, the Pakistan are one of the top four teams in this tournament, right? I would take South Africa India, Australia, and England ahead of Pakistan, and they would probably be in that West Indies, New Zealand category, which is just one rung below, or maybe two rungs below, because South Africa is like second rung on their own. Maybe South Africa and India, because England and Australia do look very, very good, right? My prediction will be based on vibes, because that's Pakistan cricket, isn't it? This is a team which is mercurial. When it gets galvanized, when they have their backs to the wall, they become corner tigers. It's a legend that has gone on since Imran's days. And I feel like if they get hot, especially if their bowlers turn up, this is going to be another semi-final run. I don't think they can win it because they play in one particular template. And if their bowlers don't do well, I can see them winning a lot of games. They are talking about this change of mindset and everything. But I'm still yet to be convinced, right, of whether or not that is for real. And also, these things don't happen overnight. It's a process. So, based on vibes, I'm going to say semi-final run. But my mind tells me that they'll fall short in the Super 8s. But here's the caveat, or not a caveat, but I'll just add one more little nugget to this. If they do make it to the semis, there'll be one of those games which Pakistan won't be playing, which will get them there.
So basically, yeah. Vibes is how, I mean, I think that's a fair prediction, because if there's anything that can determine things for Pakistan, it's vibes.
Yeah. What about you? What's your prediction?
Yeah, I feel like Super 8s is going to be where they stop. It's tough to see them go beyond that. But, you know, with how the games go in T20 cricket, right? It takes one game or two games that can turn things around. Like, we always expect, oh, these teams are going to dominate. But I think even last year, Sri Lanka were within one game of making the semis. Mm. And that wasn't a good Sri Lankan team or a good performance by Sri Lanka. But they were within one game of going through to the semis. So you never know, right? And once it comes to knockout cricket, then anything can happen.
Absolutely. And let's see what they have in store for us. But that wraps up this episode of Footmarks. It was a long one, but I suppose that's just how storied and decorated Pakistan's T20 World Cup history has been. So if anyone of you enjoyed this episode, please give us a like on YouTube and subscribe to both this YouTube channel and Jared's other channel on YouTube. And you can also go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can serve as your one-stop shop for all of the work that we do as a team, whether it be written content, podcasts, or videos. You can find it all at goodareas.co. That'll be it for this week's Footmarks episode, and we'll be back next week with another episode of this podcast. Hope you guys have a good one. That's all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make any content, Minbo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minbo.pro now.